life is pain. I wake up every morning, I'm in pain. I go to work in pain. You know how many times I wanted to just give up?
Breaker, love maker, backbreaker, but then I made a mistake.
Welcome back. After a hiatus, Gentleman Bedlam has returned to the airwaves. Triumphantly, I am staring at a half-full tumbler of rye. My name is Nathan Bishop. I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing. You guys, the last time we recorded was August 12th, dear listener. The Mariners were 60-54. They were 7.5 games out of first and pushing towards a wild card spot. Since that time, they've gone 10-13 and are currently losing to the Texas Rangers. We are in the fire of hell itself. Eventually, the flesh will slough off of our bones, and we will be born anew, free, and rise like phoenixes. But today, we are still very much on fire. Thank you for joining us. Joining me, as always, is Scott Weber, ex-managing editor of Lookout Landing, and now just really cool guy. Scott, how are you?
I'm good. We're living in the pit. We were living in the pit.
Hey, get out of my pit.
Oh, yeah. And the landlord of the pit, landlord and squatter simultaneously, is David Bartholomew Skiba. David, how are things?
It's Bart to my friends.
Oh, how are you?
Oh. I am.
That's why I call you Bartholomew, by the way.
A blood blister in both my mouth and on my leg at the same time.
Is it the same blood blister?
Yeah, it's huge.
One's in the upper world and the other's in the upside down world.
You guys want to know a fun fact?
What happened to Barb?
David, I want to know a fun fact. I'm sad.
It's September 6th of 2016. And the Seattle Mariners are blank games out of first place in the AL West.
13.5.
11.5. On this same date in 2015, a season that ruined us all and we all could call forlorn, the Seattle Mariners were how many games out of first place?
13.
9.
Oh my God.
I'm now staring at a third full tumbler glass of rye. Thank you.
And wondering where the other two-thirds is going to come into play.
I've already kind of prematurely spilled the beans there a little bit, but let's talk alcohol before we get too into baseball. David, what are you drinking this evening?
So I have to give a quick shout out to Ghost Fish Brewing Company, who I frequented on my way back from another shout out, Ferguson Plumbing Supply off of the West Seattle Bridge. On my way back to a local brewery, stopped in for a beer at Ghost Fish. Absolutely delightful. One beer became two thanks to a wonderful Australian Shepherd named Oli. And I am now drinking a Seattle cider, dry hard cider, of which I will eventually turn towards the southern regions of America, where I will go to Ecliptic Brewing for their sour peach. And then I will eventually end my night in Ruination in San Diego with Stone Brewing Company.
That sounds like a fine journey. This is like a bachelor party, but like a wild.
You know what I decided to let me give you guys a tip.
Always.
About 2 years ago, I decided that every day of my life, I would live like it was my bachelor party.
And now
you've got a blood blister in your upper lip, 100
hours a week,
and a blood blister on your leg.
And I'm still a bachelor,
and still partying. That's a hell of a lineup, David. I will make sure that we touch base tomorrow to see how you're doing. Scott, what are you drinking?
I have so much of a less impressive lineup than Skiba does. I would say there's more in a screw top category. No, I'm kidding. Not yet. I am drinking Sierra Nevada Hop Hunter IPA.
Oh, I like that beer.
Which I think is quite nice. Is 6.2 ABV. and making my way through a six pack, not going super hard like Skiba. I am, after all, about to embark on a long vacation in which I will drink the whole time. So, you know,
thoughts and prayers to you in this difficult
time. Yeah, where
time.
Does the balance lie between building up a tolerance and outdoing it before you go? Like, there's got to be.
What's a king to a god?
Yeah. Find your place at the end of the road. Nick Spencer.
Place at the table. Scott Weber.
Have we talked about Sierra
Nevada? A kid in King Arthur's court.
Have we talked about Sierra Nevada on this podcast before?
I think so, maybe. I think it's.
I mean, they're huge, obviously. They don't.
I love Sierra Nevada.
Yeah,
I think it's great.
I think that I love that those guys are always trying to new stuff. They haven't rested on their laurels. And every time I drink their beer, I just really like it, which I can't say the same for a similarly large craft brewery at this point.
I've been to their spot in Chico, which is, for if any random reason you're going through Chico and have time, for sure stop. It's awesome. And their tap list, as you could imagine, at the brewery is unreal, the kind of stuff they're doing right now. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's really neat. I really like them. I'm drinking rye whiskey, as I think I already mentioned.
Whose?
I don't have the bottle in front of me.
Jack Daniels.
No, Mr. That's Mr. Daniels.
Mr. Jack Daniels.
It is not Jack Daniels. It's something I commented on. I put it on our Slack a few weeks ago. It's the same brand. And resident alcohol expert Zach Sanders said, quote, "That looks expensive." I think it costs $20 for this bottle of whiskey, which isn't quite bottom shelf, but pretty close to bottom shelf.
Pretty close. You can slide.
That is expensive
for
Zach Sanders.
I mean, that's like a week and many bags of wine's worth of alcohol for him.
Many cold, cold bags of wine.
So, yeah, this is not particularly good. It burns a lot when I drink it. So I figured it's appropriate to just drink it straight.
But that means it's working.
That's how you know. It's working.
That's how the medicine goes down.
We're in the pit, which is full of fire.
That's what I fell into the pit.
Let us face headlong the abyss that yawns in front of us that is known as Mariners baseball.
Jesus.
What the hell has happened?
What the hell, everyone?
Seriously, please write to us at davidskiba@hotmail.com and tell
Hotmail.
Us what the hell happened.
Or you could hit me at bubblicious babe@aol.edu.
Oh man, you guys, I am really, really struggling with this team right now. I remember when we recorded back in May, back when things were fun. And I remember kind of getting on people for you know, like saying, well, this is small sample size and they're going to fall back to earth and blah, 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 blah. And I remember what we said about that, or at least what I remember what I said. I didn't remember what you idiot said. I remember what I said about that was,
hey,
was that even if they did fall apart, it was worth it to have that feeling that we had in May, which was that one of an unbridled enthusiasm of like, hey, they're 28-18. They really look like they might be one of the best teams in baseball. Like this might actually be happening. And I still stand by that. But God, I really could have done without what they've done the last 3 weeks. They've gone.
But we had that feeling not that long ago. I mean, on the 22nd of August, they were 10 games over again.
10 games over 500. They were 10 games over 500, having won. Let's see. They won the series against the A's back last time we recorded. Then they split the series with the Angels, which was kind of a bummer on the road. That involved a three-run blown lead by a series of relief pitchers that we'll get to the bullpen later. Then they came home against Milwaukee. They won their first game. We were all at that game 7-6. It was
so
a great time. So fun. Then they blew the doors off the next day. That put them at 10 games over 500, which was and shall forever be their high water mark over 500 for 2016. And then they were ahead, I believe, 6-3 in the ninth inning of the next game against the Brewers. And then everything went to hell. You guys, did either of you watch that game?
Well, since we attended the game on the 19th of August, I have seen exactly one game.
And it was not this one.
It was the 6-3 loss to Texas.
Oh,
which feels about right.
Yeah. just a very forgettable loss.
So net average of what the last 23 games
I think
have
I
been,
saw all of them in one game.
Scott, did you by any chance see this game against the Brewers on Sunday, August 21st?
I did not. No.
Okay.
But
we can. We don't need to go into it too much.
Was you want to know something Tom interesting?
Meltdown? Go ahead.
Oh, was that the which game was that? What went down? I see things in bits and pieces. You got to be
the
a little
Tom meltdown, right?
That was the Tom meltdown coupled with Leonis Martin dropping what was probably a catchable ball.
Oh,
very
yes.
Uncharacteristic.
Oh, I did see this game.
Followed
this game.
By in a season of suboptimal routes and poor defense.
Yeah.
Easily the most confusing play of Nori Aoki's Seattle Mariner career, in which a fly ball was hit to the gap, and he just, he didn't even take that inefficient of a route. He just sort of wandered over there as though somebody had put him in left field in like a potato sack and like kidnapped him and then like just ripped it off right before the ball got hit and the sun was dazzling his eyes and he was trying to figure out where the hell he was and why is he on a baseball field and what even is a baseball field and why the fuck would I go try to get this ball? I don't even know where I am. That was the route that Nori Aoki took to that.
Can I say something really quick about Nori Aoki?
Fine.
Because I really don't want to fight this battle again. There's a reason why, over the course of an offseason, let's say, there's an offseason coming up. There's a reason why some quote-unquote talent is cheaper than other talent.
Breaking.
Sure.
And pardon sometimes a deal doesn't really matter.
Well, I feel like your anger at this point lies with the former ownership of the Mariners. Would that be accurate? Or is it
ownership only in quotes?
Well, what do we? I mean, so there. Let's get into the Aoki thing a little bit. Let's talk about that because I've been ripping the guy, pretty much all season long. He's been he was abysmal offensively in the first half. He's been way worse defensively than I was really led to believe as somebody who didn't really pay attention to him.
I'd never really seen visually what he was like in the outfield, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I saw the metrics and I've seen him hit plenty of times, but I just haven't watched enough. You don't see the Giants play a game on a Tuesday afternoon in June or whatever
right.
The name of that one podcast was. So I had no idea that he took these like family circus running around in
going
in spirals and figure eights
right.
Loops to every single
in
place.
In and out of just car as, windows.
Yeah. Through the trunk, flip down the thing to go back into the back seat,
right,
and climb over the passenger door to get out that way.
Nori Aoki cannot figure out if he wants the soup of the day or the tomato bisque. He's eternally stuck in that decision.
It's Larry David choosing between the two chicken places, right?
I feel okay. So we are not in any way, shape, or form, anti-stats, anti-progressive analysis on this show.
Of course not.
As a whole, we are not objectively against those things. However, I feel like watching Nori Aoki play left field every single day is a really good summation of how far we have to go in publicly available defensive metrics. I'm sure that teams have their proprietary metrics that we don't get to see that are way better than what we're using. But when I get told that, he looks funky in the outfield, but he gets
it
done. But it works. No, it doesn't work.
God, no.
And I'm okay saying that no matter what the numbers tell me. Because I've seen good defense, and this is not it. I've watched Raul. I've seen both sides of the spectrum. I've watched Randy Winn play left field in Safeco Field. I've watched Raul Ibanez play left field in Safeco Field. And Nori Aoki is a hell of a lot closer to Raul Ibanez than he is to Randy Winn. I don't need to be told this league average with love. By some.
I know I am firmly on the record as very pro Mark Trumbo, but I acknowledge 100% of how shitty he is at playing outfield. I would prefer to watch Mark Trumbo play outfield.
Oh, absolutely.
You're basically also kind of making an argument for Nelson Cruz there because it's a very similar experience.
Sure, I would prefer. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, me too. He's slow. He didn't get to it, but he's going to take a decent route. He'll play a ball off the wall like a normal human being. He doesn't literally have a spaghetti noodle attached to his right shoulder that he's trying to throw in with. Like, ugh, I just...
I did propose in Slack, and I think it's we should discuss it on air briefly. Would you prefer Stefan Romero or Noriaki as your left field in terms of defense?
Yes.
Is there a like a loaded revolver that I can choose as option three?
And Romero's terrible.
I mean, he is so bad. Though I have not been any angrier this year than I was in that game in Texas earlier, where he caught the ball with a runner on third and then just kind of looked at the ball as though he had never caught a fly ball before, which maybe that's true. And then, yeah, then like pump faked it in. And then Elvis Andrews decided, well, if he's just going to keep out there fucking around with the ball, I guess I'll go score.
Here we go.
Oh, I was so livid. Oh, man. So, yeah.
So here's another game. So, as of right now, Baseball Prospectus gives us 3.5% odds of making the playoffs. Mm-hmm. It's over-under.
Over-under?
Over. Like, oh, yeah, I'd take over on 3.5.
I'd take the over.
Okay, that can transition me to something else, because I'm interested to talk about this. I know you guys haven't been able to watch that many games recently, but even a cursory glance of box scores, you know, if God forbid you read the recaps that we write on lookoutlanding.com.
I don't.
Thank you, Scott. as this team has fallen apart, because it really has been, you know, I was bitching and moaning about the Milwaukee game. It's really the last 2+ weeks. They're 4-11 in the last 15 games. And it's just to torpedo them. 10-13 in the last 23. They had every chance in front of them, and they just spit the bit against that week against the Angels in Milwaukee.
That's what looks really bad.
And you blow 2-3-run leads in the late innings against those teams, and you go from 6-1 to 4-3. And then of course you struggle against you're in battles against good teams like the Yankees, who actually are young and really talented now, and then the Rangers, who just beat the shit out of us every time we play them, except for last night. So you know, it's been the pitching, and I wrote about this I think last week on the site. That's what's been killing them. It's just completely fallen apart. And it was one thing when it was Iwakuma and Paxton and Felix right off the injury kind of holding things together, and then LeBlanc or Miranda or Joe Weiland or Cody Martin were, you know, shit in the bed 2 out of every 5 days. But now it's felt like every single guy that they've thrown out on that mound in the last 2 to 3 weeks has had a complete disaster start. And go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just saying, especially Felix, too, because there were 5 starts in a row where he was, you know, looking good. Still a couple 4-walk games, but for the most part, keeping the ball down, being able to locate when he needed it to, limiting all the damage when he got runners on base. Like, he looked good. And then the last 2 starts have been, what, 6 runs each?
Yeah.
In the last 2 starts.
Got the win yesterday, though, baby.
Oh, man. The guys on route, they were really praising him for, you know, doing just enough for the team.
Do we feel like Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais maybe just put their hands in the pot too often?
You know,
when it comes to the pitching staff?
This is something that I was kind of wondering about. I don't think there's any way we can really quantify this. And this is a team, an organization that now at least professes to be much more conscientious about the idea of the mental aspects of the game. And I don't think any of us would debate that baseball is an intensely mental game as far as preparation, confidence, just feeling right.
No question.
And I've wondered as they've just cycled through their 40 man over and over and over and over and over again, if there isn't some small cost to not knowing which team you're going to play on, either Tacoma or Seattle in a given week, or who your teammates are going to be when you walk in the dugout.
Pitch determines which bus you take.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. That's what I was going to say. Uh-huh. I think that for some of the fringe guys, I don't mind. I actually agree with the approach that you put a bunch of guys out there and see what sticks.
Ah, I do too.
But if you're the guy that's come up in late August and you've seen every other piece of spaghetti that's come unglued from that refrigerator and gone slid down back to Tacoma, it's on your mind. Absolutely.
And that's just, it's just one more thing. I mean,
and I bet they perform better now. Like guys that are up now, some of the relievers that have come up from AAA now, I'm sure they'll do better because there's no pressure that they're going to go back. They're here. They're going to make the prorated
the
salary.
The Dan Altavillas of the world.
Yeah, exactly.
A couple other guys. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I just, there's no way of really measuring that. And I kind of wonder if, I'm sure that they think about it, especially a front office with a guy like Jerry DePoto, who did play in the major leagues and did have a long career as a player. I'm sure it's something that they factor in. And I want to make it clear, I don't think that that's like the reason why the pitching has fallen apart. I think the reason the pitching has fallen apart is because they don't have very many good pitchers. But you've definitely seen an almost across the board underperformance from all of the pitchers in the last 2 weeks. Even the guys like Diaz, who did end up blowing one save, but other than that has been really strong. He's been shaky as hell in the process. He's been getting saves for weeks now. So, you know, it's kind of, I think I said yesterday that I think this is the best position talent that this organization has put on the field since 2003. And I think I still believe that, even a day later, believe it or not. Go ahead.
Okay. No, I just have an interesting segue to that because I was looking at some historical context today. And
were you doing show prep?
A little bit.
Oof.
More like mid-show
prep. Very off.
Trying to impress us.
Very off-brand, but okay.
Yeah, sorry about that. So 2 years ago, 2014, that was a year in which the Mariners were contending and took it down to the wire. But do you feel like if you look at these two seasons, which of these feels like a better pure talent team? Yeah, obviously, Nathan, you think that this is the best pure talent this organization has had in a year.
In 13 years.
Okay. Yes.
Since 2003. Yes. Okay.
But 2 years ago to this date, the Mariners were 78-63.
A year ago today, they were 2 years ago today in 2014.
They were 78-63.
And then collapsed to finish September.
And players who played in that game were Austin Jackson, Dustin Ackley, Chris DiNorfia, Kendrys Morales, Stephen Romero, Logan Morrison, Andy Chavez, Corey Hart, James Jones, Brad Miller, and pitching was Chris Young, Carson Smith, Charlie Frobisch, Danny Farquhar, Fernando Rodney.
Yeah, I mean, how much of that roster was held up by them getting a career year from almost every single relief pitcher they had on that roster?
Sure.
And Andy Chavez.
And Felix. That may end up going down as his last great season.
But I guess the question is there, is when you say, is this the most talented team, does that require a certain leap of faith to forward-thinking talent as well, too? Because, you know, this roster here has a lot of crap on it. It had a lot of crap in 2014 as well, but the future still in some ways looks a little bit brighter than it does or than it did in 2014, just because the young talent was dead end. You know, it was smoke,
it was
and
over.
Ackley and Zanino's future was looking unwritten but still quite bleak. And now we're at the point where the future looks a little bit better, even though it's still pretty bleak with guys like Marte and the rest are unknown. In terms of pure talent, do you really evaluate these two on like a similar playing field? Because I think the 2014 team was just better. I think it was better.
Well, to clarify, what I said was I think that this year's team has the best positional talent.
Positional talent.
Yes.
Okay. I would agree with that.
No question.
I would agree with that.
Which makes the X factor that pitching. You know, we could transition into this really easily and start talking about the future because I think by and large, I can get behind what I think Jerry DePoto and Tom Allison and Tom McNamara are trying to do with this organization. And I think they've got maybe one more year with this core where you could even, you know, squint and say, sure, go for it. And I don't know if it's going to work because I don't know.
You have to, though, don't you? You have to next year. You have to reload and try again next year.
No question. I think you do. I think you have. But we can get into that. I mean, I can't imagine not.
I can't really imagine not either. Here's my thinking.
There's a great argument for not doing it.
There is. Jerry DePoto came from LAA with the Angels. He knows the damage that contracts like the Pujols and Josh Hamilton deals can do, and that weight of aging, declining talent. And I'm really just, I just wonder if, like, the way that that guy has shown his aggressiveness and his willingness to go out there and make deals, I don't know if he'd have the go-ahead from ownership to do it. I have no insight into what the ownership is. I have no insight into what he's thinking, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's a part of him saying, I should just blow this up. I should just get rid of everybody after this year, get young, because the thing that will define this organization is the thing that they've never, ever been good at, and that's consistently creating a top 10 player development farm system. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're talking a big game. That's what they've talked the biggest game about since DePoto was hired, from the hiring of Andy McKay, this people in process, control the zone. They're big on finding success in the minor leagues, and they found that. I think every single one of their affiliates has made the playoffs in the minor leagues.
All seven.
Yep, seven for seven. Like, they are putting a system in place in a way that I don't remember a Mariner team doing. I'm not saying that it's going to work. I'm saying that's what they're putting there.
Well, we won't know for 3 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know. And what they need is more bullets. They need more. They need They need to stockpile more of that. And where do they get it from? You know, where, because there's going to be attrition there. It doesn't matter how good they are at developing talent. There's not enough down there to refine, you know,
a cool way to evaluate on the relative short term, the quality of this player development scheme is, you know, let's take Ben Gamel for instance, and let's see what he does for the next 162 baseball games.
Mm-hmm.
Like a player like that, like coming in from a different system, let's see what happens there.
Sure. I think I think they will keep people together. If I had to bet on it, I think they'll make one more run in 2017. I think that the pressure organization-wide, city-wide, fan base-wide, I mean, this is the organization with the longest playoff drought in baseball. I can't see them really trying to sell people on another 3 to 5 year rebuild. So I don't think they will. If they were in another division, well, I'd feel so much better about it. I keep looking at Houston and Texas. These organizations do so much right, and the Rangers have so much money and so much talent.
Yeah.
Like, how are you getting past these guys with this core? Because they've been going at it for now 3 years. Next year will be the fourth, minus Cruz. They didn't have Cruz in 2014. But I'm trying to be optimistic about it. I think I believe in what they're trying to do. I just, man, they started from way back. At the beginning of this year, they just had so long to go.
Well, and I think that's quickly what my point would be, is that, you know, Jerry DePoto didn't give any inclination that this year was a playoff or bust year. This was a, you know, almost evaluation year from the way he spoke going into the season. And I think they've almost played to exactly his estimation of this squad. So maybe that's reassuring. Maybe it's not.
I think they played exactly to our estimations of this squad. I mean,
yours and mine, remember, at least.
Yeah, at the very beginning, I think everyone said this is a 83-86 win team.
Yeah, I think I had them at 84, which
I think that's kind of the consensus going in.
Yeah, 84 win team with upside if things go right.
So it's an interesting crossroads. I mean, it's two different paths. And what does the roadmap look for? Reload and go for it one more time. It maybe looks like you try and squeeze into the high 80s in wins next year. Realistically, you're probably not going to crack into the 90 without spending a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will inevitably be faced with a heavy decline of Felix Hernandez, a eventual pending decline of Robinson Cano, a definite decline of Nelson Cruz in the final year of his contract in 2018. So you probably take a step backwards in 18 and 19. So you have to be reloading that entire time. So it just looks like there's a future if they go for it next year and don't make it. It's almost like there's a 3-year path of treading water after that, where they're probably not good enough to contend in this division.
Right.
Or they decide to retool, rebuild, take a step back next year. But could they be in better shape faster than if they decided to, you know, hold on to someone like Cruz? I know, Nathan, you've talked about trading Cruz like a lot. You want to trade him after this year.
I wanted to trade him after last year.
Yeah. So, I mean, what does that path look like for you? Because
I think
frankly, I'm completely torn. I'm torn. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they should go.
I think with this FA season, trading Cruz makes a lot more sense.
I just didn't think that Cruz was going to repeat his year from last year at all.
That makes one of us.
Yes. And he hasn't. he has not been as good this year.
No,
as
it's not quite the
year.
Same.
But it's been a very small step down. This is still one of the elite power hitters in the game. And honestly, he's showing that he may be declining, but that it's not going to be the collapse.
It's not going to be a cliff.
Watching that guy play for almost two full years now, he is just a much better overall hitter than I realized before the Mariners acquired him. He absolutely has the power, like whatever Giancarlo Stanton is, which is the best arguably that this game has ever seen. Nelson Cruz is right below that in the conversation for the best power tool in baseball. But his ability to work counts, his ability to drive the ball the other way.
Those are improved things too.
Yeah.
He's never walked as much as he did since he got to Seattle, and he makes more contact now too.
Yeah, it's incredible. The guy
makes
just
better contact.
Yep. He's just not he's not a three true outcome kind of player. He wasn't that. He was just power and strikeouts mostly while he was in Texas. And just watching that guy continue to develop, I don't know if that's the Edgar effect. I don't know if that's just he's pretty legendary for his preparation and his work ethic. And if that's anything like what you see when he's playing the game, where he busts his ass every single time he hits a baseball, no matter where he hits it. The guy's just a treat. I will miss the ever loving hell out of Nelson Cruz if they trade him after this year.
No question.
And I still think it's probably the best thing for this organization. He will be probably their most valuable trade chip, unless they were going to toss around trading Kyle Seager.
Edwin Diaz.
Yeah, that's another one.
You think that they would get more for Diaz than they would for Cruz?
Yes, because of the contract.
No, I don't think so.
I do.
I think Cruz still gets more.
I do too. I don't know if it's a runaway.
I mean, we saw what Chapman got flipped for twice.
Yeah, Diaz is Chapman, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, he's younger and same velo.
Yeah, but he's worse.
He just doesn't have the track record either. I mean, yeah, Aldis has like a four or 5 year track record of being among the elite. Really,
Diaz is throwing smoke, but in reality, I don't think his trade value is that dissimilar to what Carson Smith was.
Ooh, I would put him up. I'd put him higher.
I think the ceiling is higher probably with
it. I agree, but I don't think it's a huge.
You don't think
gap
his real value is much more?
I think we're taking.
I think we kind of saw what the market pays for. I mean, at the end of the day, he's a half season reliever. That's less time than Carson Smith spent with an excellent rookie year. So the stuff is better, but I don't know. The track record's less.
You guys, Kyle Seager made an error.
Unsurprising.
Whatever.
Yeah. 21st error of the season.
Yeah, he's had some real boots.
He misses Brad Miller. Someone's got to do it.
For me, a player like Cruz to wrap it up on or to open it up again on my end is quintessential for why you don't punt 2017, especially with the second wild card.
Yeah.
The bubble for contention is, I mean, let's just call it 87 wins every year, because that's what it seems to kind of be falling out towards, 88, 87. Mm-hmm. And that's not a pipe dream for any team except for essentially the Phillies and Reds this year, and, well, the Braves too.
Yeah.
And apparently the Twins.
Yeah. Good pick.
So you have to be truly, truly at the bottom of things to not be able to see that in April.
I think that's a really good point. And I think there's just so much of me that's so tired of hoping for a team to hit its 85th percentile to get to 87 wins. Like I'm so ready for a team that kicks ass again. Like
team's 85th wasn't 87.
I think what's frustrating is that you get one of those seasons maybe once every 10, 15 years, and the Mariners had theirs in 2009.
And 2014, I feel like.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that team, you could play 100 seasons with that team, and I think there's maybe one or two where they win more games than they ended up winning in 2014. They just were not all that good. I feel like this roster has played closer to their 50th percentile. Like,
I will say, though, I think unquestionably one of the offseason priorities of this team has to be to get younger, because what we've seen the last 3 weeks is just absolutely running out of gas.
They need depth, and they need youth, because they've got to. I mean, you're seeing guys like I'm having a really hard time watching Robinson Cano run the bases, and that guy's hitting the ever living shit out of the baseball.
Yeah, but this is what's so interesting. How do you get depth and how do you get youth? You have to blow up the old town.
Exactly.
It's the only way to do it.
Or you go dumpster diving.
But I mean, but a player like Ben Gamel didn't cost you any current talent. And sure,
yeah,
he's
but Ben
probably
Gamel
a fourth
is just
outfielder. But I mean, that's a player that could turn into something, right? I mean,
yeah, he could be a useful player on a decent
like,
team.
Like if you made a team of, if you made a few of those Ben Gamel-esque acquisitions and then backfill shortstop with a player like, I don't know, Eric Ibar or someone looking for a bounce back, sort of like how they managed catcher this year.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. that's how you contend for a wild card now.
I will say that I think that the best thing that Jerry did in the offseason, which I felt like this at the time and I still feel like it now, is he committed nothing during the offseason.
Oh,
he
didn't.
He just patched holes. You know, guys like Iannetta and Aoki and a lot of the parts that have kind of fizzled this year are not people that this organization is tied to. Granted, they're going to have to find other replacements, which means that they're going to have to probably end up doing the exact same thing again. They're just going to have to do a better job finding, patching those holes.
Yeah. Payroll-wise, this team is in great position. The only issue they face is it's a horrible free agency year.
Horrible free agency year and nobody to trade.
Yeah.
So there's also that.
It's going to have to be super creative.
Yeah. You guys, let's wrap this up really quick before we take a break. I'm almost out of alcohol, believe it or not.
It's the most pressing issue.
Yeah. Okay. So that actually, we could talk for 3 hours.
Oh, 2017 is fascinating.
Yeah.
Where this organization is.
We'll have plenty of off-season to chat about that,
yes,
too.
Yes, we will.
We'll chit and we will chat. Okay.
But you know what? The Mariners have sucked ass, so let's get a little silly.
Yeah. Work it. All right. We're going to take a break. We will come back. We'll answer some Twitter Q&A. And, you know, honestly, if I'm 100% honest, I don't even know what will happen after the Twitter Q&A. We might just stop. We may talk for 2 hours. You'll have to listen to find out. Or look on your phone.
Or look at the timestamp.
Don't do that. Don't do it.
Don't look at the timestamp.
Life is better lived with mystery and wonder. We'll be right back.
Sang the following song. I drink beer to improve my mind. In the war, help mankind through these dark and trying times. Hey, butter, butter. Hey, batter, hey, swing, batter, swing, hey, swing away, swing for the fence, live for the day, hey, put your life.
Hey, you're still here. That's nice. Thank you for sticking with us through the break. We are going to take some of your Twitter questions now, and David told me that he found a good one. David, did you lie?
I did.
Oh, okay, well then read the crap question.
Not surprising.
This question comes in from a man who has apparently photoshopped his face onto a gazelle who goes by Speechy McPeachy, who you can find at QRK1122.
It is Speechy McPeachy. I can confirm. And I'm not, I mean, maybe this is just what he looks like.
There's a chance he's an incredibly fast person.
Yes.
Well, half person.
With ant
land creature.
Yes.
Sort of a bastard of evolution.
Same.
So he asks us, well, he asked me, but I'll allow you guys to answer as well. Yo, Davey Ski, which is what most of my friends call me.
Mm.
If you could steal Marty McFly's DeLorean, which Mariners moment would you go back and change?
I mean, so I'm limited to one horrible life-altering tragedy that I can avoid. What about the other 25 to 30?
Is it for me? For me, it's the fourth walk on night court.
Explain.
Well, that was just a generally horrible night for me.
David, tell me your night court story.
Oh,
no
God.
One's listening.
I hate my night court story.
Tell it here for the nice people. Here, I got a violin.
So at the time,
I'll play the Civil War music.
Like you don't already have
cold
that on
September.
Hey, you know what, Scott? Okay, David.
Okay, at the time of night court, I was courting a woman. And things ultimately ended very well. However, at the time, we had purchased tickets to go together to Night Court, or I purchased tickets day of. So literally there were like three tickets left in Safeco, and I somehow landed two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So super jazzed, like feeling it so much. And like literally 3 days later, I'm moving to Walla Walla to make wine. So it's like my last hurrah in Seattle. I show up at her place in North Lake Union, and I proceed to wait for her for 2.5 hours in the car. And leave, eventually listen to the first like probably five innings of Night Court just in the car, like really pissed off, and then get to my friend's house, was about a 30-minute drive.
Wait, this person never showed up?
Yes. So at this point, I feel like I believe they have ditched me.
Mm.
So I show up at my friend's house to watch final.
Ooh, we got to back it up. What's keeping you in the car the whole time? Like a text, I'll be there. No, you're stone cold.
I was just like, yeah, that's dedication. Yeah.
I think that's a thing you want to change, not what the Mariners should have changed that day.
Mm.
Well, no. It gets weirder.
Okay. Right.
So I get to my my other buddy's house because I wanted to watch the game with someone I cared about after Robbie tied the game with the solo shot. So I get there. We watch the final couple innings, and I mean, we all remember how it ends. But before it ends, I get a text from this woman. And she tells me, and this is, I mean, we are really close friends. This is factually accurate at this point. Her grandmother
passed away. Unlike the rest of the story.
Yeah, her grandmother passed away like 30 minutes before Night Court happened. So it was like full on family emergency. So I just sat there at her house while she had to go up to like Auburn and go see her grandmother die.
Good God.
And that was my Night Court story.
But at least the game, you know, brought you back a little bit.
Really, really lived up to its billing. I would change Night Court. Like, don't walk in the winning run.
Don't do that. But you still love Fernando Rodney. That's what I love about you.
I do love Fernando Rodney so much.
I mean, that man was responsible for so much pain and misery. And yet still, you love him.
It's mostly because, throwing it out there to all the listeners, all three of you, if any of you gets me the San Diego Padres white away jersey, Fernando Rodney, I will give you a lifetime membership to a local brewery.
What does that entail exactly? What are the membership benefits of a local brewery?
I don't kick you out at 10 o'clock, but like 10:15.
Can you throw in a laminated membership card?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
I can fab something up.
Exactly what I was going to say.
I can make something.
Also, I want a mug with my name on it that just hangs back there that nobody else can drink out of except for me.
Do you want it? What do you want it to say? World's best drinker?
World's 35th best drinker, because I just don't want to lie.
Yeah, you're probably up there. You're top 40.
I'm getting there. You know, I'm fine.
If there's one thing that describes Nathan, it's top 40.
I'm somewhere on the depth chart, okay? I'm not on the practice squad. Now we're mixing sports. You know what mine is? I feel like I should be able to pull one from way back. But honestly, like, as I'm getting older, I'm realizing that sadness and misery that's more than like 3 or 4 years old kind of just gets lost in the panoply of sadness and misery that is existence. Yeah. So it's gonna be a more recent one. That one was for staff writer Matt Ellis, by the way, who won't listen to this, but my boy.
Can I quickly say my 2016 would be the walk off by Albert Pujols, or the 3-run bomb by Pujols?
The C-check through, yeah, right after that comeback. Yeah, I'm with you. That was the worst pitch thrown by the 2016 Seattle Mariners. I agree.
That was Brad Lidge style.
Mine was yes, by similar hitter, and yet not at all the same hitter at the same time. Mine would have been the Toronto start towards the end of September for Felix Hernandez in 2014.
Yeah. Yep,
that was a pivot shift. And more than one way. The start arguably cost him the Cy Young. It directly cost the Mariners a chance at the playoffs, although there were a myriad of factors that were including but not limited to Austin Jackson and Kendrys Morales existing, Brad Miller chucking a ball over a first baseman's head in Texas in April, and God knows what other miserable failures. But that start haunts me. I bet it haunts Felix. Do you guys think if he goes six innings and allows two runs in that start that he wins the Cy Young?
Yes.
Like that's what it was.
In fact, there were multiple people who voted for Kluber that year that said that was the reason.
And I'm going to look it up right now to see what.
And that start later got changed to give him less earned runs.
But right after the damage was done. Yeah.
I missed that entire game because I was working. But sounds bad.
It was, you know, Dave, it was really bad. Imagine
it was an implosion.
Imagine, and I'm going to try to think of another example. I don't know.
And it was one of those like nail in the coffin type games, too.
Yeah.
I mean, so mine is the one thing that always comes to mind. It's similar as in it's a moment that's burned into my mind of where you have, you know, endless hope and something terrible, terrible happens and it's ingrained in you forever. In 2007, the Mariners were about 20 games over 500 in the middle of August, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And they went on a something like 2-14 run or something like that that just destroyed their season. And the peak of that is I think they'd lost a couple of games.
Wallabalooza.
And they were in Cleveland, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And they were winning the game, and the arms were gassed, and they had Rick White come in with the bases loaded, and he walked Kenny Lofton for a walk-off walk. And then the Mariners proceeded to lose, I believe, 8 of the next 9. And that was like the 4th or 5th loss in a row. And then they continued to lose, you know, 10 of the next 12 or whatever it was. And by the time it was over, I mean, they were done. Yeah. And I believe that they were tied for the division lead at the start of that streak. Or
at right
least
up there.
Very close to it. Yeah.
It was right around the time of Lollapalooza, right? Because that was the big thing. They were right there with the Angels and had that big home series of like, hey, let's all get out there, blah, blah. And they just got hammered.
Yep.
Totally swept. You know, I can't remember, Scott. You can help me remember. Was the outrage there? Because I remember that the comment after that loss was, well, you got to throw a guy like Rick in there. He's been through the wars. Like those direct words.
Yeah, that was John McLaren.
Leaning on
veterans in terrible situations. But I believe I think the bullpen was just gassed or something like that.
He's
not a guy that should have been in that situation normally. I think that should have been probably like a Brandon Morrow situation maybe, or 2007.
Was Morrow even up in 7?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was,
should have
yeah,
been.
That was the Bavese era. Yep.
That's JJ Putz for the closer.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was I can't remember if they were ahead or something tells me they weren't ahead because Putz didn't pitch.
There is one thing that we get comments for on this podcast whenever we post it, and it's when we get something historically inaccurate. So I'm sure somebody will chime in. Can I circle back around really quick because I'm in a very dark mood and this is right now. Well, so it was game 157 in 2014. It was September 23rd and Felix blew up. And, you know, if I told you that Felix went out, you know, in his next start and threw 4 2/3, 6 hits, 8 runs, 3 walks and 5 strikeouts, you'd be like, yeah, that's about right for right now. Think about how big of a deal it was, that start. And think about how 2 years later, we're just like, yeah, you know, that's a Felix start. That's in play. That after that start, his ERA was at 2.18.
Oh, my God.
That was 2 years ago, you guys. All things die. What's the next question?
Death comes for us all. Next.
I was going to say other moments I would change. I was actually at the game where Jeff Cirillo made an error and didn't get the career errorless game streak record. And I was also at the game in 2002 where the A's clinched and we didn't go to the playoffs.
Oof.
That sounds awful.
So,
I mean, if we're going to change one other one, I would say I don't know exactly which moment I would change, but the Roger Clemens start in, I think, the 2001 ALCS. No, 2000, because they still had A-Rod. When he threw a one-hitter and struck out 15, I don't know what I would have done. Like, put X-Lax in his Gatorade or something. But, you know,
that makes you more focused, more tense.
I think maybe he didn't take it that one time. He thought the bat was the ball, and so he chucked it at Mike Piazza. Which begs the question, why were you throwing the ball at Mike Piazza while you ran to first? But nobody ever really got a clear answer on that one. I really hate Roger Clemens.
Ooh.
Hall of Famer, Roger Clemens.
Yeah, one of the greatest pitchers to ever live. Also a grade A. You want to talk about top 40. Top 40 asshole. All time.
Oh, yeah.
like true asshole.
Wait, you mean like,
David?
His personality.
Yes, thank you for clarifying. This is a family podcast.
Dan Gomez, who you can find at Gomez Dan.
Oh yeah, Fat Bottom
asks
Girls.
Us, friend of the podcast. Dan, what is your favorite season, and why is it fall? And for me, it's because fall means the Mariners aren't playing anymore.
Oh my god!
Go that Hawks. Is a man. That is a loaded question. I mean, I've got to say, like, season 4 of Parks and Recreation, incredible. Season 1 of Lost was fantastic.
So good.
Definitely not season 2 of The Wire. Season 4 of Dexter, phenomenal. Season 4 of Friday Night Lights, 4 and 5, really, just fantastic. And season 1 of The OC. Those are my top seasons of all time.
I was going to say season 4 of The Office because Jim and Pam are dating, so they finally stopped lollygagging around that. But also the writer's strike had occurred, so they started doing these giant combo episodes. So you got like the Dunder Mifflin Fun Run, which was supposed to be like 3 episodes, I'm sure, but it's just like 42 minutes of Michael Scott trying to fight rabies because he hit Meredith with a car, and then it's so ridiculous.
You guys are not answering this question in the spirit in
which
it was asked.
Okay, the best summer, the best season is summer, and it's not even close.
Kyle Seager, tie game.
Dingers?
Dingers.
Mmm. That sets the stage for his next eventual error.
Shh.
I love, okay, brief digression while we're doing Twitter Q&A, because we didn't talk about him in the serious baseball discussion. That guy is so damn good, and this team is so lucky to have him. He is one
Kyle?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
God, what a year he's having. Like, career year. Everybody keeps saying that is the one thing I got right. I think if we circle back to our first episode of this, as I said, I thought that Kyle would have a career year that would push 6 wins. And he's going to be right there by the end of September. That guy's freaking awesome. The best season is fall for a variety of reasons. One, it's not hot as shit outside. Two, you actually get some rainfall, which means that your grass is not just a brown apocalypse that looks like something out of Mad Max. Three, and most importantly, and neither of you would understand this, your damn kids go back to school. So you don't have to spend all day, every day, like, hey, I'm not at work and I'm excited to just kick back and relax. No, kids. All day, every day. And I love my kids. But now they get to go be wards of the state for, 30 hours a week.
3 square meals.
No, if they're lucky. So that is, to me, the real clincher for why fall is the best year, the best season. Also, it has kick-ass holidays, and football comes back, and we get to, sit around, and Thanksgiving's awesome, and it's also when my birthday is. So
I will admit that I do love fall for the fashion.
Please. David. Please elaborate.
Boots come back out. Clarks.
The Clarks are back in. Dave can pull out his Timberlands if he needs to.
Everyone's done wearing white.
The shirt. You pull out the shirt.
The shirt is back in session. And finally, Daryl can get back into his well-manicured and beautiful, if I'm being objective, scarf collection.
See, I figured Daryl is more of an ascot guy.
It gets his neck a little too sweaty. He doesn't like it. The scarf you can wear open, like open chest, like bam. Like I take like 5 buttons off the flannel.
But
plus
I thought
a scarf.
He wore infinity scarves exclusively.
Yes. And Gucci shades.
I'm so out of my depth on this conversation. I don't even know what fashion is. I don't even know what the hell an ascot is.
Let me give you some fall fashion tips. Are you ready?
Please. I'm looking to woo women.
You need 3 patterns. It's all you need. You need houndstooth, herringbone, plaid. Layer accordingly.
You just described season 2 of Sherlock.
Always herringbone. Always herringbone on top or showing last. And then I would put something felt or perhaps duck cloth on top of it.
What the hell is duck cloth?
God.
It's delicious.
What's the next question? I'm done with you, rabble.
Josh Cow?
I'm pretty sure we settled on cow.
I think it's cow.
I think that's what we ended up with.
It was cuh.
Okay, here's the question. And wow, we're doing this live, so it's scary. Josh Cow has he has 3 questions. The last one we'll get to for sure. But of his 2 questions, I'm going to give you guys an option.
Oh, getting a little greedy here, Josh.
One is a transaction question.
He's 16. The world is one not is, everything. He just wants more of everything.
One is transaction in its answer, and the other is more conceptual, more theoretical.
Let's do it.
Okay, Josh Cow, who you can find at Josh Cow the number 44.
Mm-hmm. Cow spelled like it sounds. K-U-H,
as we all have grown up spelling cow.
Uh-huh.
Wonders, why can't the Mariners win?
I mean, they won yesterday.
Yeah, they win sometimes.
Yeah, Josh, come on, man. Just another entitled millennial shit.
Do you think he'll ever work or own a home?
I mean, he will definitely do the former and definitely never do the latter. Next question.
Chris K, who you can find at @I_Miss.
We just skipped over the first two parts of Josh's questions.
Muninori asks us, have we all collectively accepted umpire incompetence, especially at home plate, as part of the price of following baseball? And for me, the answer is, well, I guess so.
It's always been incompetent. That's the thing. The technology has just revealed how incompetent it's always been. I don't think it's actually worse. Do you guys?
It does feel really bad this year.
Dude, go back and watch some.
True.
Like, go watch Kerry Wood when he struck out a million guys in his rookie year. And look at how ridiculous that strike zone is. And go look at when Eric Bedard, before he was traded to the Mariners, I think he had a 16 strikeout game. I went back and watched that this year for God knows why reason. But the strike zone was just absolutely absurd. And if there was, you know, more people actively tracking balls and strikes and paying attention, if there was Twitter where a reaction and outrage could have been so well documented, it would have
been
one thing.
Are you saying that Twitter's primary resource is outrage?
No, absolutely not. It's for sharing recipes.
And, you
know, that's what I use it for.
Retweeting good content.
Yeah.
It's
community.
I don't think that it's worse. Another great example, and one that I've used on Twitter before, is the 1997 NLCS when LeVon Hernandez was pitching against the
Braves
and Eric Gregg was
the
home plate umpire.
That's the perfect example.
I mean, pitches were at least 8 inches outside all night long and getting
that
a strike call.
That's the model home. Come and tour it.
Yeah,
also,
exactly.
The Little League World Series has always been poorly umped.
Well, bless those guys. They're volunteers. They're doing the best that they can. You know, they weren't very good at sports
when
they were
on national TV. Better show up this 12-year-old.
Weren't very good at sports growing up. And, you know, these kids will learn their place. You know, they'll figure it out. No,
they'll become Todd Frazier.
I think, you know, I've gone back and forth on this.
Todd Frazier.
You know, I've gone back and forth on this. I really don't know if I actually do want robot umpires at home. What I want is a theoretical reality in which human beings are capable of calling the strike zone in the way that we think it should be called. And I'm not sure if that's possible. Because
doesn't that sound pompous and pretentious?
No.
Don't you get tired of humans? I get so tired of people.
You want robots?
No, I just get tired of people asking for things all the time.
Alien robots now.
I want this. The strike zone's not perfect.
Right. Real talk. Why can't we have a promotion relegation system for umpires
in
which they are graded upon the accuracy of how well they do, and they go up and down between AA, AAA, the majors, based on their accuracy?
Well, real talk, Scott, due to the power of unionized labor, Scott.
Who will guard the guardsmen?
Hot take.
Woof.
Who will watch the watchmen?
Who will guard the watchmen, I believe is what he said.
Oh, okay. Well, I just want to watch
it. I said, who will guard the
guardsmen?
Actually,
I did watch it. It wasn't very good. It was too long. Zack Snyder out of control in that movie.
Guys, if we're taking the literal translation from Latin, who will guard the guardsmen?
Is that Latin?
It is. It is a phrase.
Who is the guardsman?
It was a phrase used by those who opposed the Republic.
I just want humans to be better at umpiring. That's all.
I just want humans to be better at...
I mean, like, let's be
not too much.
Let's be very real. It's really hard. Like,
sure, there's a lot of decisions.
I called balls and strikes for my kids, like, coach pitch team, and they're throwing it. Maybe, I mean, well, all caveats aside of my own blindness and just general human incompetence, but like, anytime a pitch comes by that's remotely close to a strike, you're like, I have to make a decision here, and I can't say something like, well, man, that was really close and a good effort, but no, it's just low. I'm sorry. Ball. You have to just
binary.
Ball. Yeah. It's really hard. So,
and also we forget about the human element sometimes too. Like maybe you got a cold and it's cold outside and you're like, fuck this, I want to go home.
Or you're in
how
Minneapolis.
How often do you think that happens?
And there's a steakhouse calling.
I mean, how often? Yeah. And yeah, we should be
Charles Mulligan Steakhouse is calling your name.
Let he who has not phoned in a days of work to leave early and go to a nice meal cast the first stone.
Oh, dude, you don't want to have. I'm out of stones, dude.
Stoneless.
We'll take. Stone. We'll use that for the intro.
I have no stones.
David, let's do two more questions and then wrap this up. What else do we have that's good?
So, oh man, I didn't know I was gonna get put on this limit.
We can go all night.
Karina Kotek, who is a friend of the podcast.
Also friend, yes.
Who you can find at Filer, P-H-I-L-E-R, mm-hmm. the number 25, asks, on a scale of 1 to haven't you learned your lesson, how dumb was it that I bought tickets to last series?
It was absolutely not dumb. Because baseball is not about winning. And this has been one of the most enjoyable seasons of Mariner baseball in the history of the franchise, which I granted is a shallow pool to be drawing from. But this team has had more moments than any team, since at least 2003. And even though they're probably not going to make the playoffs, they have been fun as hell to watch more often than not. Recent swoon aside, if you take the entire season in its totality, this has been a really enjoyable season, and you should go there at the end of September, and who gives a shit what their record is? You should cheer for Felix. You should cheer for Leonis Martin. You should cheer for Tom Wilhelmsen and all of the stories and moments that they give. You should cheer for Adam Lind's dumbass if he's still there, for hitting two walk-off home runs.
Hot fire.
There's been too many good moments this season to just allow despair to fully embrace you. I'm indulging myself tonight in the show, but it's been a really fun season if you consider it all the way back to the beginning.
I would also point out the Mariners are a 7-game win streak away from being right in the heat of it.
I would also point out that
after the optimist
after that last series, if that 7-game win streak doesn't happen, there will be no baseball for 6 months, and that is so much worse than even watching the Mariners play. So go there to the last series and enjoy it. And soak up the last shred of summer, which actually is a pretty damn good season. It's no fall, but it's really good.
I didn't get the answer to that seriously.
At least improve six wins on last year, at least.
Yes. It's been a really fun season. And the direction of this franchise, as far as thoroughness, thought, the level of detail that they're going forward in is
incredibly higher.
Years ahead of the previous regime, which again, shallow pool and whatnot. But things have been way worse. Go have fun. And enjoy
Plus,
this team.
Safe
Things have been
fine.
Better. Date me.
Regardless. All right. Wrap it up. That's it. We're done. See you next season.
Pretend that I don't love you. You could never pretend that I'm your man. That's exactly the way that I want it. It's exactly the way that I am. And you call me in the morning with your troubles, taking it downtown every night. I could never place the stars at night above. Got my hands on the ground.